With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, so today...
Do you want to open the door there?
Yeah. So today I was thinking we might have a chat about insects and their pals, the arthropods, the invertebrates, All the bugs. And if you come out here, I'll show you my front garden. How are you, Colette Kinsella, by the way?
I'm very well, Colette. Right, what have we got here?
Right, so this is my front garden, and it's like every other front garden nowadays. It seems to have a driveway in it. Everybody loves their driveway to protect their car. But that's at the detriment of our grasses and our plants that you'd have around. So, to combat that, I put in a fairly messy and wild verge on the side of it.
Well, it looks really nice, actually, because you have it's overgrown with ivies and you have some beautiful logs just lying there.
Yeah.
And you've got some trees. There's a lot going on. It's a tiny space, but there's a lot going on.
Yeah, so I have deciduous, I have pines, I have magnolia. Some very high bushes for the birds to nest in because they need height if they want to nest. And it covered the ground with ivies and stuff for plenty of hiding spaces for any little bugs that are around. And the most important thing, and this is something that everybody can do at home, is I was passing by a tree felling, which is all too common nowadays, unfortunately, with councils wanting to clean up.
Yes.
So what I did was I asked the guys on the site, could I take a couple of the logs off the old tree? Now, it's a deciduous tree, so it's not pine or cica, which are fairly toxic to animals. But it's a nice deciduous tree. And if I come over... Are you going to come over here?
I am, yeah. And the logs, I have to say, they do look very nice as well. Like, they're beautiful
piece
of wood.
Yeah. Now, if you roll it over, what have we got here?
Look at that.
There you go. Centipede.
Wow.
Baby centipedes. Yeah. We've got egg casings here from slugs. We have two or three different species of woodlice. Small native snails here.
The gas thing is, when you turn it over, you don't see anything. But then suddenly, as your eye becomes accustomed, there's tons of life in
there. There's loads. And it's just because... Now, there'd be even more life here. The best time to look under logs for bugs and stuff like that is when it's dry. Because when it's wet, the guys are all out doing their thing. All bugs, all insects and arthropods are essentially sea creatures that decided to come onto land a couple of 100 million years ago, and they still need that dampness.
Yeah.
So when it does rain or if it's a foggy morning, they'll be out. Look at that lovely redwood.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Very skinny, loads of legs.
Yeah.
And there's tons of woodlice there, lots and lots of woodlice.
Lots of worms. Now we'll go back up here to the one. Now, if you notice, I put in a little pond.
Oh, yeah.
So that's just in case.
The spare frogs out the front.
Yeah, exactly. Our hoverflies. Look at this now.
Oh, so you just roll back a smaller, a big piece of log. It's about 4 feet.
Yeah.
What was that big spider just around?
That was a European giant house spider.
Ah.
So that's
tons of earthworms as well that I'm seeing.
Yeah. And and different species of centipede here.
Oh, right.
Really long one.
That's a very small, very
skinny,
light-coloured. Is that young or is it?
No, that's an adult.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's quite small, just a centimetre.
Yeah, I think we have two or three species in the country.
Yeah.
But they had the giant house spider in there. That's our web.
So if you didn't have these logs...
What it would be is a monoculture. If I had a clean kind of just the gravel down or just wood chippings down, it'd be nothing.
Yeah.
But when you plant it up with a bit of cover and then you put your logs out, you get that kind of little home
Yeah.
It's a little kind of a little micro environment for them all to go in. Now, if you look at the
driveways,
they stay here, the driveways, they're just...
It's just all paved.
Paved and barren, you know?
So yours is a little oasis of greenery and
biodiversity. Exactly.
For all those animals. So that means the birds flying around here.
Everything lands in here to eat. Everything.
Yeah. So if everybody has a tiny little bridge like this one in their front or back garden or balcony, that would make
exactly
a big difference.
That would. And like, in places like this, or people make an effort like this, it means the world. It literally means the world. It gives them breeding space.
Yeah.
Gives opportunities for hedgehogs and all to walk up from the park here and sniff out some food.
Yeah.
We have badgers in here at night sniffing around. Yeah. They come right down from the Dodder Valley up here sniffing around for food.
God.
So.
And look, it's so... Like the lawns between on either side of the road here are clipped back and people's driveways are paved over. So this is just a lovely oasis.
Yeah. And actually, it looks messy now, but believe it or not, during the summer when the trees come in and... We have lots of different wildflowers that will come up. It actually looks really well.
Yeah.
It does. You can control it to a certain degree, you know.
And
it's something I keep telling people because it can be overwhelming when you read news articles or you see it on the telly that the insect population is dying and the planet could be wiped out if they disappear, which is all true. But no one tells you how you can help out.
Yeah.
And this is a very simple way of helping out. And it's easy to do. It doesn't require any effort. And you're also recycling nature. If you're using old logs, put a bucket in the ground to put your little pond in. All that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. So it's lashing rain and it's freezing. We'll be
heading
into
the shed. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Let's go to the tropics.
Yeah,
you got it.
Got it. Okay, here we go.
Professional.
So, Carly and Ennis, we're
rocking
the shed.
Oh, we are indeed, yes.
So, listen, that chat that we started outside, I have been wanting to talk about insects for quite a while, but I was a bit worried that it was going to get a bit too
depressed, sad
and doom and gloom. But you feel, okay, we need to talk about insects, but you also feel that people could do something about it.
Yeah. It would be very easy for us here to sit here now for the next half an hour and talk about how everything has gone terribly wrong, how 40% of our insects worldwide have disappeared at a rate of 2% a year, and then in 100 years' time they'll be completely gone. We can go on about that and scream about the sky falling, or we can say how we can make a difference in our own little areas and try and encourage and improve conditions for them to live, especially around towns and cities. We can do that.
I have I have a really basic question first of all. A really, really basic question.
Fire away.
Why do we need insects? Like, why bother?
Okay, so insects and all arthropods, which are the invertebrates, animals without backbones, all your bugs and your snails and all that kind of, they are keystone species. So that means they're right in the middle of food webs, are at the base of food webs, either way. So everything eats them. Birds, frogs, reptiles, mammals, everything eats them or eats something that eats them. So when they disappear, the food web collapses. The other thing they do is they're nature's recyclers. They chew up all the dead leaves, they mulch it, they do their poos, it goes into the ground, it recreates or it puts all the proper nutrients back in the ground for the trees. And that keeps the forest cycle going. Then the most popular thing that's going around at the moment is the fact that they're pollinators. And they do that for free. An incredible kind of service for mankind, because all our fruit and some of our vegetables will come from pollinated plants. So that's the bees and the beetles and the other certain flies as well that will go around collecting pollen and also fertilising the plants so we get our fruit and veg. So, three things that they do for free. So that's, you know, and not just things that they do for free that we could do without them. If they're gone, it's a massive collapse on three elements that we need to survive. Three elements of the planet. So if they're not around, we're not around. It's as simple as that.
I think I read somewhere that, do you know the biologist E.O. Wilson?
Yes.
If I remember correctly, he wrote somewhere that if the insects disappear, that we'll be gone in 3 months.
Yeah, well, if we were still doing our current model of intensive farming and if we were going like that, it wouldn't be good for us. It definitely not wouldn't be good. The thing about humanity is we're very inventive and creative. We probably have a massive drop in our own numbers, but then somebody would come up with, like, I don't know, cubes of algae that you could, you know, barely survive off. Mm. And
wouldn't taste great.
It wouldn't taste great. But and then in China, they through mass agriculture in China, they wiped out all their wild bees. So what they have to do is literally get human bees to go around with chicken feathers on sticks and pollinate all their plants. And it's a massive amount of work that has to be done, because they involved themselves so much in this, like, high intensive agriculture. Now, that's one of the biggest problems in the West with the insect declines, is intensive agriculture. Small farms which were properly organic with multiple crops cycled, they're all gone. And now you have big, huge farms, no hedgerows, no trees, just row on row on row of corn, wheat, or whatever they're growing at the time. And that's a monoculture, and that's no good for anything. So that's a major problem in itself. Second to that is they have to pump tons of poisons into the soil to protect the plants, because it's over such a large area, to protect our crops. And these insecticides that they're putting into the ground are so virulent and so strong that they actually remain there for years afterwards. So not only are they killing the pests that would be eating the crops, they go into the soils, they kill all the earthworms, they kill all the grubs for the next generation of bugs. That in turn has an effect on the bird life, the bat life, the amphibians, everything, like we were talking about earlier on. So that's the major problem in the West. In the countries where you would have rainforests, like in Puerto Rico, for example, in one of their rainforests, a pristine rainforest, protected area, there was a 98% drop in invertebrate life since the 70s. And the reason for that is there's no intensive farming going on around there. So what the speculation of the reason is, and what they've come to the conclusion is, it's because of a 2-degree change in temperature. So you have these animals that evolve in this very complex system where it's, you know, rainforests are massive food webs and very complex and very stable. And when that small change in temperature with climate change, it's just decimating all these invertebrates. So they're getting punched out of it from a lot of different directions. And this is why we need to step up our game as people who are concerned for, you know, the future of our grandchildren, if we're going to be selfish, but the future of the planet in general.
And the other non-humans.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Everything on this world has a right to be here and a right to exist. And if we can assist in keeping them around, I think it's important that we do.
I totally agree. When we're talking about species disappearing, people get very upset, understandably, about, you know, species like rhinos or some of the big animals that
charismatic
are
megafauna. Yeah.
And rightly so, but it's very easy, I think, because these animals have a particular look about them, and because we can identify with them, they look cute to us because of the way they're built. Their faces are recognisable as faces. Yeah. They sort of remind us of our own offspring, and that's what makes them.
Yes.
That's what brings out this
anthropomorphification.
It sort of brings out that nurturing instinct in us where we find it easy then to actually want to save them and to care about them. But for you, with your particular gang of insects and arthropods, how do you make people want to save these? Because they're not particularly sexy, they're not particularly cute looking to some people. How do you make people want care about enough about insects to want to save them?
Yeah, it's hard because, as you said, they're not your stereotypical furry, cuddly creatures. Well, maybe the tarantulas are, but they're definitely not cuddly. I try to tell people how amazing they are, and some of the stuff, some of their life cycles, and how incredible their life cycles are, and some of the interesting things they do. I also try to point out what they do for us, as I was talking to you there earlier on, the stuff that goes unnoticed. They're working away in the background to keep us able to go to the movies on a Friday night.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's kind of weird to say that, but that's the truth. Tarantulas in particular, like one of the oldest species of spiders on the planet, one of the oldest inverts, came out of the sea, found their little niche, and they're still rocking today doing exactly the same thing. The centipedes I have in here, the giant Vietnamese centipedes, are monstrous animals that like it's nearly the length of your arm, and they'll eat bats.
Wow.
Crawl up walls and grab bats, and they'll tackle anything. But they were around millions of years ago. Again, harking back to my fascination with times gone by and how cool things were, and they're still around doing the exact same thing. Spiders will eat 400 to 800 million tons of pests a year.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible. That's for free, again.
Yeah.
You know, so they are such an important part of the ecosystem. All these animals are very close to being an encounter with an alien life
yeah.
form, when you think of it that way as well, because they don't see the world the way we do at all. Their vision is poor compared to ours. Well, most of them, some spiders have great vision, but
well, their vision is different, isn't it?
It's very different, and they see the world through sensitive hairs in their body and through their webs. Some spiders, the orb weavers that you'd see outside your door, like they'd see the world through their webs.
Right.
That's actually an extension of their bodies.
So when something lands on that, they feel that
they feel that, and they can sense what's going on.
And some insects see different parts of the light spectrum, right?
Yeah. So ultraviolet, stuff like that.
Which we don't see.
No, and if you light up, or if you look at certain plants under ultraviolet, even though they look really attractive to us, and we go, oh, that must be what attracts the bees and the wasps to these beautiful flowers. It's nothing to do with that. It's actually the ultraviolet light that they're following in. It's a fascinating world when you look at it through the eyes of a creature, of these creatures who are so completely different to us. This is another thing, especially with kids, and I'm a big kid, but it's a jungle out there. It literally is. Under your bin bag you leave out for the night, you take it up in the morning, you have a centipede in there, and you might have a beetle, and you'd see a few carcasses of like wood lice and a chewed up worm, and I'm there going, oh my god, this is a battle zone here last night. So this is all happening in people's yards and their back gardens.
Wow.
And it's underappreciated. It's like the plains of Africa,
yeah.
except in a miniature version
yeah.
in your garden.
Yeah.
And all these predators and herbivores and all the stuff that's going on, their relationships, earwigs looking after their babies, spiders looking after their, carrying their babies on their back, all these kind of interesting little quirky things that are going on we don't appreciate.
Yeah. And it's like tiny little soap operas going on.
Yeah, very much so.
Wow.
Very much so. And like, as I said earlier on, the opportunity to have that in all our gardens is very simple.
Mm.
It's put down a little bit of soil, a damp area for them, and maybe a rotten log. And if you can, if you have space, put in a bucket of water flush with the ground. And you have this interesting little tiny biodiverse area. And they show up. It's amazing. You could live in the middle of a car park and bugs will show up because
yeah.
they're out there looking for homes. There's
yeah.
nowhere for them to go. So
if you have a balcony, if all you have is a balcony, you can still do stuff, right?
Yeah, you could put a window box out with wildflowers in.
Mm.
All you need is very poor soil.
Mm.
Don't put compost in, for example. But like, you find all that advice online. But you can put in native wildflowers and that will give bees and bugs a home.
Mm. Yeah. What I find such a shame is when you look around, say, Dublin City where we are, there's such an emphasis on clipping things back, keeping lawns tidy, and on the verges of all the pathways, just as we saw outside your own house, you know, there's lawns, they're clipped. And if some of that was let grow wild, how amazing would that be? But also, if you choose to, you know, go against convention and have what some people would call a messy front garden with just wild stuff growing
yeah.
in it, people sort of look at you a bit strangely. It's such a shame. We need, I think, to have a bit of a shift in our culture to realise it's fine.
Yeah.
This is what nature is.
There's an obsession with tidying everything
yeah.
up and clipping things. And even in the parks, it's gotten worse lately where they go around in the parks and hoover up the leaves. And like, occasionally I have to go in and talk with councils over improving biodiversity or whatnot. And we had to point out to them, we were like, you're hoovering the leaves up. It's part of the natural cycle that
yeah.
they go into the ground and rot.
Yeah.
And then you'd be wondering why the trees are getting sick, or there's no butterflies, or there's no beetles, or there's no bugs. Because
yeah.
that's all part of the system.
So when you do your outreach and talk to schools, and are you trying to get kids to enjoy the dirtiness or the untidiness of nature, or are they enjoying it anyway?
The problem is there's a digital disconnect nowadays with this, because they'd rather be in an iPad than up a tree.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But in saying that, when you show kids any bugs or spiders, they completely lose their mind and they love it. And that's very encouraging, and that's over. My thing is to attack the parents in a positive way. No, not attack them, but get some beetles. But no, just to kind of just say to them, do you remember when you were a kid?
Yeah.
And that sparks this little thing. Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
Do you remember Hairy Mollies, the caterpillars that
That's
used
right.
to collect
yeah.
everywhere?
I haven't seen them in years.
Everywhere they were, and they're all gone.
Yeah.
Do you remember beetles? Do you remember all these creepy crawlies you have? And they're like, oh.
Do you remember the windscreens?
Yes. One of the things that I say to people, especially if you're having a pint down the pub and people get to, what do you do for a living? And then I get talking. They're like, ah, sure. It can't be that bad. And the first thing I would say is, well, if you don't think insect numbers are drastically dropping, when was the last time you had to clean the front of your car after a drive down the countryside?
So true.
You know, there was an entomologist in Australia actually said he drove halfway across the outback in Australia without having to clean the window of his car once.
Oh, God.
Which is like the outback in Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, that is terrifying to think. That sort of stuff, anyway, when you talk to the parents, that brings it home. And then you can suggest. And anyone who's listened to this, obviously you probably have an interest in natural history or bugs yourself or trying to make a difference. It's very easy. Just give them a little bit of breathing space. Put aside a wild corner of your property or your garden and let nature at it.
We have a tiny garden and we just have a heap of, we put a compost heap in it up against the wall. It's not in a plastic bin or anything, it's just sitting there, and we heap all our organic stuff on it. And the amount of life that comes out of it, it just thrills me every time I go down.
Yeah.
And sometimes I sneak in or I sit there in the corner and I watch what's going on, and there's birds coming from everywhere and doing their thing on it, and they're all getting something out of it.
Yeah.
Like it's so exciting to watch.
Especially at night, if you go out at night with a torch or something. I go.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Going to my compost and I'd have a look. Now, I'd probably be more looking for the frogs and the newts that would come up and eat stuff. But in saying that, you do see all these little battles going on and things sticking out. And then, like, the odd time you'll see something show up that you didn't know you had in your garden. And it's like, oh, that's brilliant. I've seen some crazy stuff, you know.
What have you seen?
Cockchafers.
What are they?
Cockchafers, so well. No, they were probably named before the old... slang word came into the, yeah. But they're a type of beetles. They're also called maybugs.
All right.
There was huge numbers of them around Ireland and England back in the day, but they breed in farmland and on grassland, so they'd lay their eggs in the grass between grassland and, say, where there would be all deciduous forest. What happened was all the forests went, the intensive agriculture happened, so when they were laying their eggs, the grubs that would develop into the adult beetles were dying off. So the numbers have crashed everywhere, but occasionally you'll see them around still. And it's, yeah, I love them. There, I was in Italy on holidays over there. Italy's great for invertebrates, really good, because they are all about organic farming in your back garden, recycling stuff. There's a load of bugs over there, and I think it blows my mind, because it reminds me of when I used to be a kid in Ireland, which isn't that long ago, because I'm, you know, not that old, but still young and virile. But it reminds me of that when you turn on a light in a porch and it would be bouncing with life.
Yeah,
still like that over in Italy. And when I was over there, I saw an absolute swarm of cockchafers coming towards me, which sounds amazing. If you were to edit that now, I had a swarm of cockchafers after me. But yeah, check them out. If you Google them, they're very chunky, kind of hairy looking beetles, ironically. And maybugs or cockchafers, the name are. They're really cool. And the odd time, especially around May, I'll get a lot of messages and tweets from people going, "What the hell is this? It just came in my kitchen window."
And you get to use the word cockchafer
and not get arrested.
I have a challenge for you.
Go ahead. Fire away.
I'm getting to know insects because we had our spiders at home, and we also had some beetles at home, various different types of beetles. And again, I just got to know them. When I got to know them, I just fell for them. They're amazing. There's one thing I can't fall for. I just can't. I've tried, but I can't. Cockroaches.
Cockroaches.
Can you sell cockroaches to me as being cool?
Cockroaches.
Do you have any here?
I have, yeah. Hang on here.
So I'm challenging you
to make cockroaches cool.
Yes.
How am I going to make cockroaches cool?
You will rise to the challenge, my friend.
I will try, yeah. I mean, like, look, my favourite cockroaches are the hissing cockroaches, obviously, because they're big, chunky animals.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a couple out here. But, I mean, again.
So you're taking a big massive big box there. Oh, my God. I'm sick. Okay.
Oh, here. I do have something. Here. I do have something, don't I? Yes, now. So these are called domino cockroaches, right? So these look like dominoes.
They do, actually.
Yeah. So they're black bodies with white spots on them. Now, here's something cool.
All right.
These are mimics. Oh. They mimic a local beetle species in India that has a chemical attack defense system.
Yeah.
So they've evolved to look exactly like that beetle. They even walk like them a little bit. And it stops. Predators think twice about eating them. So I think they're really pretty little things.
So they're sort of the size of like a €2 coin, but they're not completely round.
No.
They're actually too pretty. They are definitely too pretty.
For a cockroach?
For cockroaches.
Yeah.
Would I even take one in my hand? You have to realise how big a thing this is for me to put them on my hand.
They're only tickly.
But they're still not
have
the same effect.
This
okay.
One.
Whoa, there we go. Okay, this just jumped in. But they're actually very, very pretty.
They're a forest species. You know, there's a female there, she's full of eggs.
So they're very thin, and so that's the wings folded up there where the dots are.
No, these aren't flyers.
All right.
A lot of cockroaches aren't flyers, some are. But, like, how can you not love them?
But they don't look anything like cockroaches, like they're far too pretty.
They are cockroaches. There you go. A chihuahua doesn't look like a dog, but it is one.
All right, I'm actually sold on those.
You're sold on those ones, right? Well, that was an easy start. Now we go to the hard.
Oh God, this is looking massive. I'm seeing huge. Oh my God. Oh my God. You've just taken up a big Tupperware bucket, essentially, with a lid on top, a square one. Yeah. And they are. Oh my God. Fucking hell.
There's a lot.
Like 3 centimeters big, yeah. And there are just tons of them. And
you ready for this?
Oh, Jesus!
Hang on, no, just.
Are we going to do
press the microphone?
Ah!
There you go. So she's actually pushing air through the spherules along her body,
God.
And you can tell it's a girl because they're sexually dimorphic, which is really cool as well. So sexual dimorphism is a difference between men and female.
Okay. The hiss is amazing.
There's the male with the spores on the head there.
Ah, so that's like 3 centimeters long.
Yeah.
It looks.
They're not even fully grown.
Really?
No, so there you go. There's a big one.
I have goosebumps. This is a lot for me now. Yeah. It really is.
These are great though. And like, there's a lot of thought being put into replacing cows.
Right.
With these.
Right.
Now, that's a really cool fact. And it's a really interesting one because I know you're
they're sitting on your hands.
An animal welfare champion.
Right.
And I'm sure you would prefer for people to eat cockroach burgers than cow burgers.
Well, I feel they would suffer less than cows.
Yes.
I could be wrong, of course, but that's what I feel they would.
They would, yeah. Although they have done studies saying that these guys have little memories and personalities.
Oh, God.
So that's kind of hard. But in the greater scheme of things, it does make more sense. I'll tell you why. Environmentally, they don't cause such an impact.
Yeah.
They don't give off the same amount of CO2 fumes.
Yeah.
You can use their poo for fertilizer.
Oh,
that's
right.
Why I get such lovely tomatoes. Also, these are fed exclusively on my kitchen waste.
Okay.
And the animals in the shed eat these.
Okay.
So
these are food as well.
Oh, these are food for everything.
All right.
Yeah. So like, otherwise you just have a mass of
yeah
of cockroaches, you know. So and
like, how many do you have in there? Do you have 100?
Oh, there's a couple of hundred. Yeah.
Oh.
Like you have to count the babies as well.
Oh,
so
my God.
There's all babies in here.
So where are these native to?
So Madagascar.
Okay.
So they'd be a forest dwelling species.
Okay.
But they're really, really pretty little animals. They're great for educational talks. Kids obviously really gravitate towards them.
Yeah.
Grown up kids like me gravitate towards them too, obviously.
Why do I have a problem with cockroaches when I don't have a problem with spiders?
You know, it's everybody is afraid of something. I don't know what it is. Some people are. Here, put this one out.
Okay, you've got to put it on my hand.
Now, all
right, okay, that's
absolutely fine.
Goosebumps, but absolutely fine.
And I can see the hair standing up on your arm.
You can actually, yeah. But now that I'm looking at it, right, I'm just seeing, my God, it's perfect in the sense of what it was built to do, what it evolved to do.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Beautiful looking. So it looks like a very long 3 centimetre animal, sort of oblong shape. And it looks like it has, what do you call that?
Segments.
Segments, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful mahogany colour. Oh my God, I think I'm falling for them.
Can
this be possible?
See, I'm good, aren't I? They have live babies as well, which is kind of cool because the females will stick their bum in the air and you just see all the little, it's like a sausage comes out of them.
Really?
The white sausage, and then it explodes and all the young go out. Yeah, it's really
That's
cool.
That's amazing. And what's the advantage of that for their environment?
I suppose dispersal.
Right.
That would probably make the most sense to me, but you'd want to ask somebody who's an expert in cockroaches,
okay.
And especially in these ones.
I'm
Mr. Generalist.
Right. You've got a little tiny one there.
Yeah.
And it's very, yeah, the thing that freaks me out is when they're fast moving. But she, is it a she?
That's a she.
She's very quiet on my hand.
Yeah.
She's actually just sort of resting. And
what she's doing, the reason I gave you her is because she's about to molt.
Is she?
That's why she's very quiet.
Ah.
You can see here on her back.
Yeah.
It's like a zipper.
Yeah.
So that will split open and she'll come out. She'll be pure white.
Oh, wow.
White and soft. And then she'll harden up and she'll be a little bigger than she was before.
And is she very vulnerable then, obviously?
Obviously, big time, yeah. So
and I'm seeing some...
And they give off a pheromone as well when they're molting, which certain animals can smell. So, yeah.
And that attracts them to eat or to keeps them away?
Okay, animals will eat them like mad.
Right.
So what I'll do is every night I'll come in and I'll look for white ones.
Yeah.
Because if I feed whatever animal... A white one,
yeah.
It's able to digest everything.
Okay.
Whereas if it has the exoskeleton hard,
yeah,
it won't be able to digest that.
Yeah.
And they're quite tough, you know. You can get impactation and.
I'm seeing some empty shells or empty exoskeletons down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of them who.
Oh, that's
some of the
amazing.
Older breeders that pop their clogs as well. The others will eat them. So.
All right.
No romance. Now, there, I convinced you about them. Now, here's the hard sell.
Oh, God, okay.
There's another bunch we have here. And
look at my
what you think of my tights, ladders all over.
So you have a big pair of tights over that box.
Yeah, well, you see, one thing about cockroaches are they're great escape artists. Right. So if you look behind you on the door, see the white lining I had to put there?
Oh yeah.
So that's just to ensure my wonderful neighbour Jean doesn't wake up one day with cockroaches all over our house.
God bless your neighbours.
Oh, they're wonderful. Shouldn't they have a free zoo next door?
Ah, Jesus. Okay, you just opened another big tub.
Now these are these are red runner roaches.
And they're
another
running.
Food.
Yeah, they're about a centimetre?
Yeah. So these would be very similar to the ones you would find at our pest species.
Okay.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I would.
They look exactly like the ones you see running under the fridge.
Exactly. And I think that's what's the hard sell for a lot of people. They're associated with dirt.
Dirt, yeah. And of course, yeah. Because they live in sewers and places like that. You can see it. There's a lot of them there.
Jeez, you've got hundreds of them there.
Yeah. So these are more for smaller spiders and stuff like that, you know. And I only set the colony up there. Actually, a girl in Scotland I met on Twitter.
Yeah.
Sent me some over. So,
you have the tub here. You have a substrate at the bottom. Looks like
compost. Yeah,
and then you have egg cartons that they can actually hide under. And
eggs.
You have pieces of wood there. They can go in and out. And there's bits of vegetation to eat.
Look at the babies.
There's so many of them running. It's the whole thing's like
there's one. There's the white ones.
One.
Yeah. There you go.
And I have goosebumps everywhere. This is insane. My legs. And
Janie,
everything. I think they freak us out too because they're so hard to get rid of in the sense that they're very resilient, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want these getting out in your house big time, you know.
I've heard of
friends of mine who've had colonies in them that have escaped and they've had nightmares trying to get rid of them out of their kitchen, you know. And cockroaches can be quite invasive as well. Mm. So, like the German cockroach is basically worldwide now, you know. Mr. New York, so, yeah, but... I think I've done a good job there now. I mean, like...
I've never held a cockroach before.
There you go. Now you've held a couple.
Two.
Yeah.
My own experience of cockroaches is the usual thing of I was working in a hotel in Sydney and it was literally overrun with cockroaches. I remember I was behind the bar one day. We used to have a buffet. I was behind the bar and a customer came up looking for a drink and a cockroach just scooted over the bar right in front of the customer. I just... flicked it off the bar and just stood on it. And I do feel guilty about that. I stood on it and just kept eyeballing the customer. Yeah, why don't I get you? But then a couple of days later, the jig was up because somebody found the cockroach in their food.
Oh,
and back in the kitchen, the place was overrun with cockroaches. Like, it was unbelievable. It was overwhelming.
Do you know, here's an interesting place where we have cockroaches in Dublin.
Come on.
The Botanic Gardens.
Oh.
I have them here.
Really?
Hang on. So, I have a good friend, Theo, who works in wildlife filament. And we were in the Botanic Gardens one day and he was saying, you know, there's cockroaches here.
So in the actual gardens as opposed to the
restaurant? They're in the greenhouses.
Oh, right.
So they came in on the plants and they've been living there ever since quite happily.
Ah.
Now, it's not overrun with them, but there are quite a few. And I took two home and now I have a fairly decent colony.
So I'm holding a big Tupperware thing in my hand.
They're Australian roaches.
Oh, right. Yeah. And they're about 2 centimetres
long. So that's actually probably the same roach you encountered many years ago.
They actually have nice colouring. I can't believe I'm saying that, but they have nice colouring. They have a little bit of a white bit on their shells just behind their heads, which is very attractive.
So the difference between them and the Red Runner roach, even though they look very similar, is these guys are arboreal, so they can climb up glass.
Ah,
so I have to keep them well secured.
Yeah. And the German cockroaches are dark, aren't they?
Yeah.
I woke up one day in a hostel in Jordan and it was a really, really cheap dive and I'd stupidly left an apple right beside my bed, right beside my head.
Crawling with them?
I know there was one. I woke up and I heard a munch, 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 munch.
What size was it?
It was about 5 centimetres.
Oh,
that big?
My
That's about
God.
5 centimetres.
No, I wouldn't be having
and
that.
And I freaked. I had to keep the light on the whole night. Ah! Jesus. You just heard.
It's only a bit of food. That was brilliant. Sorry about that.
That's how tense I am. I thought you dropped it.
Cockroach on you. Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, like, they're a hard sell. Don't get me wrong.
They're a hard sell,
but they're essential.
I probably never quite warmed to them, but I've held one.
Yeah.
I didn't die. I didn't completely freak out. Not completely that time. Anyway. That's amazing.
So if we can convince people that cockroaches are decent, then...
Yeah, I think that might be your bar. But there's other beautiful insects too. So I'm looking at this amazing stick insect. I mean, they're stunning. Tell me about those. They're an easy sell, I'd imagine.
Yeah, the spiny stick insects are gorgeous. I mean,
well, they just look like
really unusual, and they get really big. Like their eggs, I got in. So it's an interesting process how you can get them. You can actually buy them on eBay as the eggs. So, and you get them in the post from other breeders.
Right.
And obviously they are eggs. You know, I put them on a bit of towel or in a bit of compost. And
they
just
have Tupperware and J-cloth.
Yeah, and spray it.
The eggs are...
And the eggs hatch out.
Millimetres?
Yeah. They hatch out and then I pop the young ones into the larger little jars and feed them up and so on and so forth. And these are going to end up in this enclosure here. Which
a large terrarium.
Yeah.
But what I find amazing is when you start looking at the individual, even the cockroaches, like they have evolved to such an extent. They've developed skills and adaptations to stay alive that are extraordinary. And like these guys look like...
Well, if you look at the cockroach extended family, like, you know, praying mantises?
Yeah.
So they're predatory cockroaches.
Oh, right.
They just broke away millions of years ago. Ah. And termites are social cockroaches.
You're reaching up for something now from the top shelf.
I'm going to see if I can show you this beautiful girl. So this is a really pretty praying mantis.
Oh my God, that is a beautiful.
So my friend Kat.
It's about 5 centimetres.
Yeah, and it looks like a leaf from the
it
back.
It does look like a leaf. It looks like almost like a flat cigar.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So my friend Catherine, she breeds all sorts of mantises, all fancy ones, and they're really beautiful. So I get the odd one because I just find them really interesting.
Yeah.
Great for talks. Great to show the evolution of camouflage.
Mm.
Like, you would swear that's a leaf.
You would.
If I put that there, you would not know it was an animal.
Absolutely not. And it's got the... So it's like a leaf, but it's raised. Its head is raised. Like you would see a praying mantis in that typical pose,
exactly.
Right? Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Now, that's extraordinary.
And it's a classic insect. Tree legs.
Yeah.
Segmented body. Look at the colours there.
Oh, yeah. I can see her now. She's moving and I can see those beautiful two front legs that are very typical and iconic. And that head. Oh, my God. She's a stunner. And she's just swaying gently as she's sitting on top
and
of the
head. And she can fly somewhat.
Can she?
Yeah. I had her in the college showing the students there. And they were quite chuffed to see her flying around.
Wow.
Quite frightened, some of them. It's bizarre when you see as well the students jumping out of their skin when they see an insect.
Just like I did a second ago.
It's allowed.
So would she fly then, mainly to get away from a predator?
Yeah, I think it's not really, or maybe to if they can go on and colonise new areas and such. You know, there's a lot of flying. If you're ever in the continent as well, you'll see lovely green European mantises as well. They're gorgeous.
Right.
Unfortunately, we're still in the little nippy here for mantises, but that may not be the case for long.
Don't get me wrong, I like insects and stuff, but you know, I'm still a bit wary of them when they're moving fast and when there's too many. And the way I try to get around that is to say, look, they're my neighbours. Yeah. They have as much right to be here as I do. You know, we have sash windows. We live in an old house. I love seeing all the spiders that nest in all the bits, like tiny spiders. And I see the spider poo and I'm fascinated by that. So little by little, I'm training myself to realise they're neighbours and they have as much right. Yeah, and once you start to flip your thinking, it's amazing how much joy you can get out of it. Like, it's actually interesting. You can watch them killing, you can watch them eating other flies. And I think that's the key, isn't it? When you start to get to know them, you can sort of fall for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all, at some stage in our life, I think there is a phase when we're kids that we're all into bugs.
Mm.
And then something happens. People grow out of it. I never grew out of it, obviously. Well, I have a friend, actually, who's an artist. He draws comic books. And he has a great saying, and I kind of apply it to the insects as well. When people say to him, when did you start drawing? And he said, when did you stop?
Yeah.
And I find the same with a fascination for the natural world, because I think most kids, at some point in their life, have a fascination with nature and wildlife, whatever it is, whether it's been collecting crabs down the seashore or throwing flies into spider webs, like me and a couple of my good buddies would be the exact same, who are spider mad, started off the same way, or collecting frog spawn. And then people stop.
Mm.
The mortgage takes over, or your career, and sometimes you have to go to a museum and just go, oh, I remember I used to see that. Or you get to see one of my colleagues giving a talk or something like that, which we would do a lot to kind of public outreach.
Yeah.
And that might spark that little that little memory, and maybe then you might think, oh, I'll put a pond in my garden, that'd be cool, or
yeah.
I'll plant some flowers, or I'll let a little patch of my pristine lawn go wild for, yeah. you know, it's slowly chipping away. Hopefully it's not too late. It's hard not to get despondent when you see figures coming in, and you just, every year, especially if you're continuously surveying, and you just see numbers dropping and dropping and dropping, and it's like, oh God, this is not good, you know? And then it hits the news. And I just hope it's not too late, but there you go. You just have to keep slugging away.
Yeah, I think you just have to keep at it. You have to keep trying. Oh, yeah. Like, no matter how depressing it gets, you just have to say, even if I have a log outside my door, at least I can look at these insects and see what's going on and learn about it.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, listen, I need a cup of tea or something stronger after that.
We're doomed.
That was a nice day in the shed. Thank you for that.
No problem. Really enjoyed it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.